This is an RNIB Connect radio podcast.
As we continue to celebrate 200 years since Louis Braille invented his tactile reading and writing system, Braille, here on RNIB Connect Radio, we are chatting with blind and partially sighted people to find out what Braille means to them and how Braille has helped them join their life. I'm delighted to say that I'm now joined by the Right Honourable Lord Blunkett, David Blunkett, who has been a Braille user for all his life. When I had a little bit more sight, I do remember seeing Lord Blunkett on television news reports when he was Home Secretary, delivering speeches and answering questions in the House of Commons, with a sheet or few of Braille close to hand. Hello, David, and welcome to RNIB Connect Radio.
Nice to be with you.
David, may I ask when you, I suppose, first sort of got your hands on Braille, because I know you've used Braille for all your life, and I wondered at that sort of early stage whether you may have been introduced to raised letters before learning Braille, because I know before Louis Braille invented his tactile reading and writing system in the blind school in Paris where he was being taught, the children there were taught using raised letters, and I wondered if that was something you came across.
I'm smiling as I answer your question because I don't quite go back the 200 years to the early 19th century. I remember Moon. There were books available in the school I went to, the special school for the blind, which was then in Sheffield, the primary school. It's closed a long time ago now, but I do remember touching Moon, but I never learnt it. I learnt Braille from the age of four, and it just came naturally because obviously I didn't know anything different. And in those days, we had writing frames where you had to write downwards because you were using a stylus to literally prick the letters out. And you had to write from right to left because obviously when you turned it over, it had to be a mirror image. So it was a bit like Chinese in the sense that I was writing right to left, and I was writing the reverse of the actual letter. So for those who are Braille readers, I was writing an F when I needed to do a D so that it came out as a D. And this, I mean, when you think back, the age of four, five, six, this was a nightmare. And then we got Stainsby's, which was the precursor to Perkins. And they wrote downwards, but they were mechanical, so you weren't having to prick out the dots with a stylus. And then with Perkins, of course, the writer was punching the dots upwards so you could write left to right. And you can imagine what it was like as a child. I mean, it was a discipline, all right. When I think back on it, it's a wonder I learned it.
And I suppose that must be something that many people may not sort of really think about learning Braille now, is how people learnt Braille, you know, sort of 50-odd years ago kind of stuff, when you were having to sort of use a stylus and prick out Braille using, you know, sort of a writer, you know, and a frame and everything else. And the development of Braille has just moved so much in the last 50-odd years. So people might not think of how difficult it was. And I suppose it is that thing, you know, if that's all you're sort of started out on life with, then that's what you learn, I suppose.
That's what you learn. That's what you were used to. You didn't think about it. You just got on with it. I was never a very fluent Braille reader. I read Braille perfectly well, and I use it for notes, and I use it for agendas, for meetings. I'm not good at reading a speech out loud. I think I once did it to a major public event, and I hated every minute of it. And from then on, I said, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to make notes and I'm going to speak in my own way off the cuff. And if people don't like it, then too bad. But I had to read it when I was making statements as a minister. So as a Secretary of State, the print version was being handed out as you stood at the dispatch box to make the statement. The statement usually was somewhere between 1,000, 1,200 words. And you had to read that verbatim. And I found that was probably my most difficult challenge in the House of Commons. No problem with making a speech, no problem on the whole with answering questions any more than anyone else. But actually reading that statement into the record was something I really hated. And you mentioned at the beginning the paper on the dispatch box in the Commons. I used to have a real problem with making sure that the pages separated out. We used talcum powder And I was very careful not to have them all sort of collected together, because if I turned two pages, I could make an absolute mess of it. I also needed to get rid of the pages because turning them over would be a real palaver. You could hear it through the PA system. So I used to just drop the pages on the floor behind the dispatch box, which was a bit clumsy. So I've certainly not missed having to do that. The two things that have really struck me recently are just how electronic braille can transform people's lives. I know that people like Gary Donahue, who works for the BBC, who's totally blind, and there are others, and Peter White, who's the disability correspondent, and obviously introduces In Touch, but also You and Yours once a week. It uses an electronic device where the screen allows the braille transcript to come across in front of them, and you can pause it or speed it up. I'm no good at that, but they are, and they're doing a fantastic job at being able to appear on radio and be able to use the script just as anyone else would. So I'm envious of them. The other bit is obviously computerized braille, where you put the text into the computer, you press the right configuration, and a braille printer will print out the sheets. And I have one of those. I had one in the Commons, and I brought it across to the House of Lords for my own purposes as well, which is very useful. But it also means that someone who doesn't know Braille can produce the Braille with you or for you.
I was going to ask you about sort of technology and whether you were a user or whether you preferred sort of hard copy Braille. I mean, I've got my notes for this interview on my Braille display on my lap in front of me, and I do prefer using sort of refreshable Braille displays because that's what I've sort of been used to. But I suspect you might prefer the hard copy, and some people like that hard copy.
I think it's an age thing. I'm sure if I were a lot younger, I'd be very happy with the display. But I've reached the age where I'm difficult to change my habits, and I prefer the hard copy. I do make very small notes sometimes on my Perkins, just a square of paper, when I just want a name or a name and address or a telephone number or a little note for speaking in the Lords, where I don't need the whole speech, but I do need a reminder. And that's quite handy because I can even put my hand in my pocket and read it. So it gives the impression that I'm always ad-libbing and always on top of it. And it's not quite like that, I have to confess.
And you've had a very successful political career. You were, I think, the youngest councillor in Britain, joining Sheffield Council at the age of 22. And of course, you became Home Secretary and you're now in the House of Lords. How do you think you would have been possibly not able to have done your political career without the use of Braille?
I think it would have been. Nothing is ever impossible, but it would have been near impossible. We had this most wonderful experience when I first went into government. I was the Secretary of State then in 97 for Education and Employment. And Tony Blair had indicated two people were definitely going to be in their full role if we won the election. And one was Gordon Brown and the other was me. And so the department had actually prepared. So they got an early computerized system in, they got an early Braille transcriber, and they very proudly produced some Braille for me a couple of days after we were in. I was going across to do a presentation to Tony Blair about the early weeks of the government. We got off to a flying start, and I got there and I opened the folder and took the Braille out, and it was complete gobbledygook. And it didn't matter because I'd been doing the job for 2.5 years in opposition. So I just talked to Tony in the normal way, and he never noticed that I didn't have any notes. But when I got back, I said it was fine. But on future occasions, I might not actually be so on top of the issues. So, and I might be chairing a meeting. So could we sort out what happened to the Braille? Anyway, they came rushing back 20 minutes, half an hour later, and said, "Secretary of State, we think we've sorted the problem. We bought the transcriber from Sweden and nobody switched it over." So I was getting Swedish Braille, and I couldn't read a single word. So things can go wrong, but it was a terrific innovation, and it made it possible for them to produce me those kind of notes. For longer stuff, I got them to read the material onto what was then old-fashioned cassettes because it was a lot easier travelling. Because Braille's very bulky. I mean, it's incredibly useful, and I think we should continue advocating for Braille in its new formats very strongly. But you use you know, it's horses for courses. You use other methods when it suits, because with your electronic screen, you can now download and take it with you and use it as a computer, can't you? Whereas carrying books with you, or carrying very, very large amount of Braille paper, because it's been produced from a print report, was very clumsy. So I got used to using audio, and I still do. I do a mixture of Braille and audio.
I think we all do that. I mean, I on my sort of desktop computer, it's audio with a QWERTY keyboard, but when I'm in a meeting taking notes, or, you know, sort of do my interviews and stuff, it's all on Braille kind of stuff. So I think we do have a sort of hybrid system, but I would not be able to do my job that I do without Braille. And I suppose with your time as Secretary of State for Education and Employment, how important do you think it is for somebody who's blind or partially sighted, who cannot read the screen or use the computer, that kind of thing, to learn Braille, or for somebody later on in life who starts to lose their sight significantly to start learning Braille? And how can we encourage people to learn Braille?
I think for someone losing their sight later in life, it's daunting. It's partly that it's tactile, and you may well have been holding a job or activities which have made your fingers less sensitive. Mine are less sensitive than they used to be, partly because sometimes when I've been cooking, particularly frying, I haven't been as careful as I should have been. And I think that is quite daunting. I think we should do everything we can to encourage and say, look, take your time over this, because even if it's as simple as making a Braille note to put on a tin or a packet of in your cupboard in the kitchen. I know that there are screen readers. You know, you can get a reader to actually read what it says on the tin. But actually, I still find that making my own labels is fast and easy and comfortable for me. So I think learning Braille, whatever time of life, really important to try and encourage that.
And I think it's also that I think there's a few myths about Braille. I mean, as we were mentioning earlier on, you know, everybody thinks that you learn Braille so that you can stand up and deliver a speech in front of a load of people. But it's not necessarily that. I mean, I wouldn't be able to narrate a book in Braille using Braille, but I read my notes and everything else. And like you, I label things at home. I've got boxes here which have got Braille labels, so I know what's inside them. So I think it's using Braille as how you want to use it. And it doesn't have to be that you have to be able to read it out loud.
I think that's a really important message. You don't have to be daunted by those who can use it so brilliantly that they mesmerize others. I don't read it so brilliantly that I mesmerize others. So I've adapted, and I read with my left hand. Many Braille readers use both hands, and it's just something that I learned from the age of four. And when I realized later in life that I was not reading Braille in the orthodox fashion, it was too late to do very much about it. And because you're busy and you've got other things to do, so you adapt. And I've adapted, and I've got no shame about that at all. I've used it in an appropriate way for me, and I want others to be able to do exactly that.
And are there any sort of maybe quirky ways that you've used Braille at all?
I tear the edge of the Braille when I made notes where I have particular points that I really do want to refer to. I don't always get it right, but it's as crude as that. So I can run my finger down the side of the paper and realize that the next really important point is there, and just have a quick look at the words so that it gives me a reminder. And I used to have special advisors who said, look, David, we know you're going to ad-lib this speech, but for the press release, it's really important that you should actually just read this into the script. So I used to do my best, and not always were they pleased with me, because sometimes I would miss it, but I would tear the edge of the paper and I would read out what they felt was an absolutely crucial element of the message of the day, and it worked most of the time.
Oh, well, thank you so much indeed, Lord Blunkett, for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio and giving me a bit of an insight into how Braille has helped you through your life. And as you say, it certainly has helped you in many ways. But thank you so much indeed as we continue to celebrate 200 years of Braille.
Thank you for inviting me. And to those who are not Braille readers, have a go. You could make it a hobby.